Welcome to Home Guard Radio, bringing you all the latest from our chaps at the front.
Hello, this is Alessio Cavatore, and for all your gaming needs, go to sixes2hit.com.
After some delay, we're back with episode 10 of Home Guard Radio. Tonight, I'm here, Craig, and joined by...
Andy.
Stephen.
And Al.
Excellent, everyone's back. We're here, aren't we? It's been a little while.
A reconstituted crew.
Yeah, we obviously lost other Andy.
Andy Misha.
Andy M, yeah, he left us long ago.
He turned traitor and jumped ship.
He's just a distant memory. You know.
He's got like Englandshire, so he's a defector.
That's exactly what he is. Yeah, traitor. That's it. Ally after him. Yeah. Communist powers after him.
When that lovely thing is the Dax out soon.
Yeah, but he doesn't play. Doesn't play Belash anymore, so it's fine.
And now the latest briefing from the Logistics Corps.
We've had a bit of a break, so we've got quite a lot of hobbies been done in that time.
Yeah, it's been... Well, what are we talking? Months?
Yeah,
years?
Centuries?
15 months since we did
the
episode.
I think that one of the reasons we've not recorded as often as we'd like is just we've gone off on our own different little mini adventures and to other game systems or other geographical locations in the country. So I'd imagine over the coming months, though. You know, Home Guard Radio will be what's the best term? Transmitting more often?
Yeah.
Is that the right term? But the one thing we should say to any listeners that have remained with us, God knows why, is that
some really awesome Facebook content.
We do have some awesome Facebook content, but the four of us have not stopped with Bolt Action, so we've remained current from edition 1 through to version 2. You know, you three guys have kept up to date with Conflict 47. We've all kept up to speed with the expansions, we've all got new armies, we've all attended tournaments, and we're going to talk about that now.
I'd also like to add in, Al's got a very impressive beard now.
I neglected that. It's very un-Soviet, un-German of me.
It's very Mountain Man-esque.
When you said, you know, the four of us have kept in touch with Bolt Action, you really meant the five, because I feel that the unit is a whole presence. In fact, the beard's got more charisma than you.
Would you say this is him now hit a midlife crisis? No. Normal people buy a motorbike or a Ferrari, he's growing a big beard.
Wait a minute.
It makes him a hipster.
Didn't you buy a motorbike in your
20s? Yeah, 21.
So you're almost 40 and that means you're about to die. That's really depressing.
And we should say that is not a hipster beard.
No.
I don't know, but couple the shirt.
That is a
beard.
Lumberjack beard.
The only thing is missing...
It's a rugged beard, isn't it?
That is rugged.
It was an inspired beard. It was an inspired beard from... I had the recent opportunity to visit Gettysburg and a few of the Civil War sites in the US. And it was purely from I didn't know much about the history of it and I wanted to see, you know, some more of America. And was in one of the museums in Gettysburg itself, and I pointed out to my wife that every picture on the wall of somebody important, they had a beard. And I said, well... You know, I better get a beard. And it's at that point, as a husband, you think your wife will tell you, no, you're wrong, and she let it go. I then became suspicious, thinking, it must be a trap. You know, it's got to be a trap. She's gonna think I'll give up before the beard arrives. You know, you get that itchy phase. Now, like 2 months later, I'm bearded out. So it's here to stay.
It's when you realise it. You get to that point in your marriage where your wife doesn't really care what you look like.
I must have crossed that bridge and not realised it. But in terms of a beard then, I don't know what army lists he's interested in, so maybe he's more like a Conflict 47 sort of guy.
Possibly.
So we'll find out.
I should add, I tried to go like beard attached for November last year for work, and I was explained to me that if I went through with it, I'd be single. And that was only for a month.
All right. So she still cares what you look like?
Yeah.
So you're like a trophy boyfriend?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, absolutely, yes, because it's been so hot in Scotland for the last, 12 years, it feels like now.
Yeah.
I'm so close to shaving my head just to try and survive and see again.
So beyond the beard, though, do you want to talk about your hobby then? What's your problem? Or what are your good things?
What are my good things?
What have you done?
What haven't I done?
Well, keep it Bolt Action related if you can.
Yeah, that would be good.
Sold it in my hobby room a little bit.
Oh yeah. Did you get assistance with our lovely returning Mr. Warden, or did you do it on your own?
Nah. Nah, I cleaned it all up from coming around.
What assistance?
Well, the late nights you have hobbying.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, it's talking about
date nights. Yeah. Our regular date night where we hobby. No, no, I just turn up, pay and leave.
Usually he leaves his stuff behind, like his special water jar.
Yeah, my special water jar.
Special.
Special. I don't know why that.
We need a picture of that.
And for, you know, for our listeners, there's literally a jar with the word special written on it.
On a label
taped,
as well.
On a label, yeah.
Taped onto it.
And I genuinely have no idea why it has a label with special on it.
But so, you can check episode 3 because I'm sure it was mentioned in that one.
Was it really?
It was, yes. I don't think he's been here since episode 1.
No, but the special jar did exist back then.
He went off to find Dunkel Girl Payne and never came back.
No, he was in episode 3.
I did leave.
He just went away and never came back.
Well,
he did explain himself and you did make excuses for him.
Well, we made jokes that we thought he'd... Yeah.
No, we will not cross that
bridge.
The jokes were made and we're glad he's back.
Very sorry.
And there's nothing... founded by
so them. As I always say, back to reality. So I've done. I painted 1,250 points of Polish Airborne in a day.
Yes,
very impressive.
Because I've kind of figured out how to paint bolt action models now.
They look good as well. They look really good.
And as you'll hear later, I just got humped with my own army again.
It was a different story though, which we'll cover.
Yes.
But yeah, you did lose. There's no getting around
spoilers.
Losing.
Spoilers. What else did I paint?
DAC?
Bolt action related, yep. I've built a DAC army.
Mm-hmm.
I've painted
12.
Six guys, an officer and his buddy, so 8 in total. That was the lovely models given to me by Rubicon and War HQ, which I have not bothered my anything to fix yet, but hey, I'm getting there.
I thought you were going
to
say pay for, but...
No, they got them for free. It's a sponsored army.
Well, that's nice of you.
I did promise to paint and build it about a year ago.
They're not really getting their bang for their buck for sponsorship,
really,
are they?
But I would like to say they all are base coated and they have got a enamel...
wash?
Not a wash, it's a... What those enamel paints you get, the big ones, the equalizers or something they're called. I can't remember, but it basically corrects the tone of the sand colour. So I'll get around to painting them this week, hopefully.
Should say as well, I think we said this at the time back when we first started doing this, but the Rubicon 251s, 250s, even the trucks, they're really, really nice little models.
They
nice
are.
Little kits.
So a mixture of Warlord, Rubicons, a bit of Blitzkrieg in there, and there's a very old 1980s Italeri 88mm gun in there. So 156 is bigger in scale, but doesn't matter, it looks awesome. It's huge, and everyone's grown 88s now because they're very fashionable.
Yeah, I think that's a whole other life choice
yeah.
conversation we need to have.
Yeah.
Mine's won't be an 88, mine's will be a 17 pounder.
You don't get to join the special 88 club.
No. I just get to burn them.
Well, so I've painted up some Conflict 47 stuff to add on to my Marine Corps. So I painted up 3 walkers and a little light coyote.
Yeah,
right
there.
Got the Grizzly, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Pond
Skipper.
Pond Skipper. Decaled up, weathered, painted them last week as well. Painted up 10 Totenkopf zombies from Ardennes Germans. And about to start working on the Nachjäger, Waffen-SS Storm Shock Troopers, Heavy Infantry.
The Heavy Infantry for the Americans. You
I think that's what I did last week.
Yeah.
That was last week's.
You have won all the hobby prizes over the last fortnight.
Well,
yeah.
That, for the last 18 months, basically, as well.
Yeah, pretty much.
You've been a busy boy.
So,
you know,
what about Al? What have you been doing since the last
with
week?
Myself, well, I think we, last time I spoke, would have been working on the Germans. That German work has continued. Fully painted now for winter is up to 1250. So I've ticked all the boxes that German players love to do. Panzer IV, good stuff. What else have we got? Plenty of Panzerfausts. I think they're a really good anti-tank option. Lots of different transports, lots of assault rifles, although not as many as, you know, you would probably think these days.
Lots of machine guns.
Yes, lots of light machine guns, which is always, well, they're just efficient now for the Germans. You'd be silly not to maximise them. You know, it was a tournament list I was building for both 1,000 points and 1,250. But what I've realised for myself is with armies that it's building maybe a couple of set lists and then going beyond that for the collection. So when I look back to my Soviets, you know, they occupy a good few shelves, in the display cabinets at home, but there's five T-34-85s, there's the Zest-3, there's cavalry, there's, I think the only kind of model I'm missing is any sort of proper artillery piece. Well, yeah, I always looked at the Zest-3 though as a sort of, you know, cheap man's pack 40, but but when I was looking at the collection, you know, it's varied, and so I've gone and done that with the Germans as well. So I've just bolted on this massive, well, it's not massive, but in my mind it's massive expansion. So there's a medium artillery piece plus crew, there's a pack 40 plus crew. There's the winter spotter pack, the blister from Warlord, so that's getting added. Medium mortar team, again winter. Kubel wagon, again the Warlord one. It's the resin metal hybrid kit, which is a lot better than their old resin metal Opal Blitz kit.
Yeah.
Well done, Warlord. Good guys.
Let's not talk about that.
Love your work.
Mark II Opal Blitz.
Perfectly
fine.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying it's
Andy
from that
me
one.
And Ali all went through the pain of building the first round.
Exactly.
Blitz.
We glued hatches and stuff to our fingers like
yeah.
pros.
I used a plastic base to wedge it so it wouldn't collapse anymore.
Yeah. The other big addition, and the other, it's I feel like it was peer pressure, but the 88,
peer pressure.
The German Flak 88, it was totally peer pressured into getting one.
And did you not get something else that peer pressured into?
No.
Big large tank, maybe.
What?
Tiger.
No, that was got those ages ago, the two tigers. I actually gave the third tiger away to a charity auction in Ireland, because I'd realised I was never going to field one, let alone three, so I can happily give one away fully painted. But that large expansion, you know, obviously there's the crew, so it's almost like another whole army in itself when you count the crew, the guns, the observers, and just all these little units that you need to add in just to add more flavour and to give myself some fun options beyond the tournament list. So that's for bolt action. I should also comment to Warlord, the 88 that I got was the new Warlord plastic. It's really good. It's good value for money. The crew are metal, which is great because I always prefer metal miniatures when it comes to the figures. But it didn't come with, I'm looking at you, Craig. Your AA, it's got the wheel thing,
yeah.
Like
the wheel mounts. Yeah.
Yeah, the wheel mounts. It didn't come with the wheel mounts, and
no,
I thought that was a bit.
That's because.
Bit naff.
AA's deploy with a cruciform crucifix thing,
yeah.
And the wheels get stacked at the side as left of the pile, so most of the kits don't have them. Blitzkrieg one's not got it.
No, the Blitzkrieg one doesn't have it either. Certainly the old Warlord kit came with the trailer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the way you've built your DAC,
it can be.
It's still on the trailer.
Yeah.
The Blitzkrieg one's exactly the same.
The only reason I mention it is I just missed it from the modelling aspect, and because it wasn't there, what I ended up doing with the 88 was the sort of cruciform for the gun. I haven't glued that onto a base, and then what I've done is I've just put a pin in the middle of the 88 itself, so it's the gun itself,
right.
And the gun shield can come off.
Yeah.
That can sit in a figure case. The cruciform can lie flat, and you get all the little stowage boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
I've ended up gluing them on individual bases so they look like more members of the crew. and it's really odd. So when it's going to come time to deploy it, I can actually adjust it and twist it a little bit easier, so it can deploy easier, and then the crew can scatter around and do whatever else. I think. I'm talking a bit too much, but the last thing that popped into my head was the gun shield, because the gun shield on the 88, is it 360 degrees?
Mm-hmm.
Is it though?
Yes, it is.
So from wherever you fire,
it's a rotating. Because it's a rotating, but we discussed this at nationals.
Yeah,
so we'll go on nationals later. I think it's wherever you fired last.
Yes.
That's what I was after. So. So the crew can just run around and just surround it, but they don't have to be positioned accurately. But that's my hobby for bolt action. It's been good.
Well, welcome to the 88 Club. I've got two.
I know.
And probably a third on the way when he gets his DAC.
No, I've got one for the DAC and one for the Winter Germans.
So are you guys going to...
So go, Mr. Bonner.
Talk to us about it.
The Hobbit.
Come on, Gandalf.
The Hobbit.
Yeah. No, he's not
Took
Gandalf.
Up all of my basic hobby time, but... For
he's
bolt action based,
soul.
I have managed to re-glue back on all the wheels of my transports.
Outstanding.
Good man.
Which is the minimum requirement, apparently, that I'm allowed to play again.
And three-wheeled trucks.
Actually, that still had 8 wheels, but it was missing 3. Don't do math. And
you were talking about the diorama of a jacking up the Jeep and putting the wheel back.
Yeah. It was an option that I asked, could I do it? You said, as long as it counts as immobilised. I was like, fine. Yeah. It's an MG. It was an option. The only other part is building a couple of sections of the new K-47 Galahad heavy infantry for K-47.
Mm-hmm.
And reconstituting, basically repainting and rebuilding any and all broken equipment that I've got from both my Finnish / Russians and my British. But that's an ongoing thing when you've got 90 plus riflemen for the British.
Yeah.
And half of them are the old stuff.
Never got, they might get a new kit soon.
You always
they have got the new kit with the DAC and the 8th Army coming out.
Yeah,
so.
A bit like proper British. Well, it was a retool to the Americans recently. Mm. So
yeah,
like
they did retool the British a couple of years ago for the rifles to be bigger so they actually didn't break as much.
The British ones only plastic kits that haven't been redone.
No, British got redone in the Mark IIs.
Like, the arms and rifle. Mm.
Yeah. No, they didn't. They just got thicker rifles.
Yeah, like the Germans got as well. Mm. So, Mr. Warden.
Yes.
Drum roll.
Well, in my long absence, to be honest, the majority of that, there was very little hobby happening. As a new life stage was entered, and there's now a toddler kicking around in the house who takes up quite a lot of time and isn't really conducive to sharp craft knives, paint, and small toy soldiers.
That's the question.
You can ask a question.
Just to check, it is your toddler.
Oh, yes, I should confirm. I should confirm we haven't abducted
child snatcher.
We haven't abducted any children. We did, yeah. So, no, but having since got back towards doing bolt action, really in the run up to Nationals earlier this year, the 7th Panzer I started so many years ago is now far more developed. Certainly it's all built, at least. And the painting progresses very, very slowly. But for me, it's been about building quite a fluffy army in terms of sort of relatively true to the sort of historical organisation of 7th Panzer, very much in its time period in the early war. So using the little Warlord Panzer 38T kit, which is a brilliant kit and an excellent little tank, I think. Blitzkrieg 88, because when I was looking at early war and looking at the way that second edition, I think, has led to a sort of upgunning of tanks, if you like, there's certainly more medium tanks knocking about the battlefield than there were in first edition. Early war, obviously, you're kind of stuffed for. You don't have Panzerfausts, you don't have decent anti-tank artillery pieces until you bring out the 88. And the nice little 25-point deduction was good.
What was the 25-point deduction?
It was 185 points in first edition, and they dropped it to 160.
In the second edition
German Army book.
Right.
That's why I only ever used mine once.
And it's made a real difference. I have to say, combining it with horse and cart rather than with a 44-point aft track has been good value as well. I'm really pleased with the list, and that just, you know, work progresses. The next plan, only concurrent plan, I think, just to have a bit of variation, will be Desert Rats. But I had already bought and built a whole range of the Perry Desert Rat infantry. Which I know are obviously slightly smaller in scale, slightly more delicate in scale than the Warlord Plastics tend to be, but they're good models, they're nice models, particularly the rifle thing that you're talking about, Stephen, about the British rifles and the kit back in the day.
Yes.
The same as the German kit, the original Grenadier kit, with those really thin
arms
spindly rifles.
Yeah.
The Perrys, the Enfields are really chunky looking. They're
mm-hmm.
really good,
and they come attached.
They do, and so it's that's the plan. I think it will be carry on with 7th Panzer, very slowly, start to put together a desert rat force for either North Africa or any Italy. And then Conflict 47, I think. And I think the first step for me will be adding some Germans. So picked up a pack of Falcons, the Fallschirmjäger flying troops, and they look pretty cool, very kind of properly weird war. And it'll be good to start getting into that. So yeah, that's been the plan. Really just going into abeyance for about 3 years and then picking up where I left off.
So quickly.
And I should say, sorry, just to, for continuity purposes, the great thing about doing early war is Dunkelgeld can
can go
somewhere else. Can get to Falkirk.
So basically what we're saying is that sort of the hobby going forward, we've got a bit of plans, some Conflict 47 stuff on the works for myself and Andy. Mr. Bonner has some too, and I hear Al's got an interesting Conflict 47 plan, or is it a secret?
No, it's not a secret at all. I am going to do
research.
Well, I'm going to expand, I'm going to build on the Russian, the Soviets and the Germans. So I've got my eye on a few things. Just, I'm just going to go with units like Lukov. I'm not going to read the rules. To be fair to the listeners, I'm actually just borrowing the rule book for the first time today. So I will read it over the next month, and then next time we record, I should have played a game and got an idea of what I'm going to talk about. The other guys can talk about it all they like. But the next major project in terms of new army, is it going to work? It's not going to be revolving around the tournament event. It's going to be something for the love of the hobby. You know, take a horrible deep breath there. I'm offending myself at the moment. It's disgusting. Non-tournament focused collection. What's the point in that?
He is choking out these words.
I know. I am choking them out.
The beard is physically crying.
But it will have. It's in no way an original theme. I'm going to go straight to the Warlord Kelly's Heroes miniatures and watch the movie more
repeatedly.
I've watched it in black and white and colour in the past, so
nice.
Black and white adds a nice quality, by the way.
This is like, should we sit and watch something? Yes, you're putting it on. Yes. Really, we're watching this again. This is the first time this week.
So however it's going to look in terms of battlefield viability, you know, how can you get three Shermans in 1,000 points? You can, but it's difficult because it's going to be a tank platoon. You know, so is it going to try and, am I going to try and make it at a point in the movie, at the end, at the middle? You know, you look at that scene where they've got all their vehicles, they've gone through the German lines just before they get attacked by their own aircraft. You know, so they've got Sky Wizard, yeah. So they've got half tracks, jeeps. You know, 50 cals are all there. So there's lots of different things I have to try and work out, and it's going to be whatever I like in the end. But
the rule of cool
being that if you wind the clock forward to 1947, if Oddball and everybody else was still running about,
which they would be, yeah,
what would they look like then with Rift Tech? You know, so is it going to be
Tiger One?
Is it going to be Oddball and a Tiger One with some weird sonic cannon? I don't know, but That's going to take a while.
Real gun.
I'll need to figure that out, but that's the future for me.
Whereas I'm doing my German-style Wolfenstein thing, crazy mad scientists, lots of creations, and yeah, it's going to be cool.
I think, actually, the Conflict 47 thing, I have an idea. I don't know when I'll find the time at all to do this, given how slowly I move on hobby, but I would love just a small force built around Hellboy, just for, you know, you talked about the Wolfenstein SS kind of special projects division type idea, you know, sitting in a mountain fortress churning out, you know, monstrosities. It's this idea that Romantic are obviously bringing out a Hellboy game, just getting that Hellboy, having the right size, right scale Hellboy miniature as a paragon in the new unit, the new rules.
Mm-hmm.
And building a small squad around him and then a small force around that, I think, again, for just pure cinematic nonsense. I'm not planning it to be particularly points efficient or being something you would run in a competitive fashion, but just, again, really cool. I mean, what's not cool about Hellboy in a World War II game?
Yeah, and that's, I look at the same way with Kelly's Heroes. I'm not going to be crunching the maths on it. It's going to be, how do I get this unit in because it's what I want.
Yeah.
You know, what do I have to sacrifice to do it? Mm-hmm. Hopefully not much. You know, I generally think in the end it will be a tank platoon.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it, at the start before the airstrike, you know, they were going to be basically a tank platoon. It's, well, you know, the whole point was get to a town, get the gold, get out.
Yeah.
They were never going to do it on foot. But
I mean, I've got Captain America leading my Conflict 47 stuff.
He sucks.
Horrible thing to say.
He does.
He does not.
Captain America.
My wife won't be listening to this podcast.
Oh yeah, she just offended Mrs. Bonner.
Yeah, and I'm sure I've offended a lot more people in the world. You heard it here first. Al says Captain America sucks.
That is a Boy Scout.
Yep.
Hellboy would kick his ass.
Hellboy and Kelly.
Yeah.
Bang! See you later, Captain America.
Now that's a duo. I'd like to see you try and pull off a raid.
Yep. So are we going to go to gaming?
Yeah, we'll go to gaming. Just keep going.
Or are we just
going to
keep the flow going?
Might
as
well.
Are you going to do all the editing later?
Yeah, I might do.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a fluid
bloopers that Al said over the last 2 years.
There's a lot of bloopers coming up, mate. There's a lot more episodes to record. There's a lot more things I can say that are going
to freak
you
out. I still think
one
of the best ones got to be
Austria?
Gordon talking about naming these tanks after My Little Ponies.
When was
Sparkle
that?
Panzer.
I don't think I did. I think you have misremembered once again.
Okay, if you go back and listen to the whole recording.
I want to talk about gaming.
I never want to talk about My Little Pony. So let's
leave that in edition one, and we'll move on to the version two.
Look forward, not back.
And now the latest briefing from the Intelligence Corps.
So
we've played a bit of Bull Action Mark Two.
We have.
I think we've played a lot.
I've had
a good dig at it.
Yeah.
And if we're, I know it's very out of time because version 2 has been out for quite a while. But I think the update has been excellent by Warlord.
Yep.
And now that it's also been sustained over time, with different FAQs to clarify, I think the rule set's tightened up nicely.
I would agree. I think there's still a few needly little interactions here and there that might
let's do a double nerf in your tanks.
No, it's not that, and I'm not going to get into it right now because I'd rather have a sort of positive chat about version 2 and how good it's been.
That's a recording around later on.
Rather than a kind of sort of getting a bit niggly about one or two little rule interactions. But no, I agree. I think there's certainly a lot. The reason I brought that up is I think there's a lot fewer of those than there were in version 1. I agree that it's tightened up in that sense. I also think the game flows slightly better.
Yep.
I was concerned about the template thing before, but I was concerned when I heard they were bringing it in.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm okay with it. I'm all right with the way that works. I think it is working well. The tweaks I've made to the German list, and this is not coming from a sort of whiny, the Germans were underpowered in the previous edition. It's more they tweaked the German list without going full Grey Knights on it. You know, they didn't turn around and suddenly make it a fanboy codex and turn the German army into an all powerful list. They nudged rules that were more or less already there. That was good. I'm pretty, and actually I suppose one of the big developments for me since sort of taking time out from the hobby has been the sort of rise of the various expansions sort of going into more detail
on
other theatres, other expanding the units that are available, the way those units can be put together in an army list, the amount of background that's out there, and that's all been really interesting as well. And I think just looking at the sort of online meta in terms of army,
that's a disgusting word,
it's not good.
Well, it's the one I've used.
I know.
I think it's led to a greater breadth of lists doing the rounds.
Yes.
There's certainly the expansion and the amount of the number of models is good, but there is more variety out there, I think. Although, as we'll talk about at Nationals, you know, there's still quite a preponderance of German lists.
I think the expansion books have helped feed individual people's, you know, need for change and for difference. You know, some people have got a passion about particular timelines in the war or theatres of war, or even just, you know, as you said with your 7th Panzer from the early war, you know, and those books help those players. Whereas I know for myself, it's always been I think it was Andy M way back in the day said it's a historically themed game, not a historically accurate game. So the expansion books are bringing accuracy to it.
Within the context
of the bolt action game, which is great. So people can field their armies of Budapest, Free French, Syriana, whatever they are. Whatever they are, I don't care. you know, they're just other armies, and it means that, you know, when you go to an event, you'll have other things to play against, or you have other things that you can then take.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Aussie army.
Yeah, Australian army's really good. Competitive as well.
The local one with the minder for the officer is actually a crocodile.
Big crocodile, yeah.
Hate
that
thing.
But I like the investment that Warlord are continuing to give the game.
Yeah.
To give us fresh product. You know, they're not barreling it out, you know, a new book a month like other war game manufacturers can, which is good. Gives us all time to digest it, or even save up money to buy more, which is horrible.
Also gives them time.
That's what they want us to do. That's what they're there for.
You know, they're drip feeding at what I think at a steady pace.
There's been a bit of a break. What was the last book? Was it Market Garden?
Yeah.
New Guinea.
Hmm.
No.
One of the two of them was the recent one. The newest one's going to be obviously the Western Desert one.
Yeah.
There's
had a good few months break between the two of them, which is good.
And that's fine, because they've got other, Warlord have got other in-house projects that they're churning out, and if you want to find out about those games, listen to another podcast.
Mm-hmm. Or there's those fine black powder armies you can buy.
Yeah, that's another.
Another podcast.
That's a whole other podcast, guys, but.
You're right. I mean, they churned out, but they're certainly the first series of sort of theatre books. This is what I'm probably misremembering, but it felt like they were churned out at a faster pace than this current sort of second wave, which is to a certain extent getting even more specific.
I think that's because of what they are. Like the first series of theatre books, like Jewel in the Sun.
Yeah.
They covered everything from the
East
Italian
Africa,
invasion of Ethiopia straight away through to basically Tunisia,
Italy,
blah, blah, blah. You had the battleground Europe that covered everything from Normandy to the Western Allies hitting the border of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Soviet one, completely forgotten what it's called.
Ostfront,
which was everything from the German invasion of Russia straight through to Russia taking Berlin.
Yeah.
Whereas now, Market Garden is based on the space of, 5 days maybe?
Yeah, precisely.
Western Desert ones were based upon a slightly longer period of time, but more specifically the two forces.
Yeah, Road to Berlin was very much the road to, you know, the battle for Berlin.
Sea Lion was just the what if situation.
Gigant had the amazing fantasy units like the cricket club. I still do fancy building a Gigant army.
But I suppose that's what version 2 has brought for us, and you know, I think all the different rules changes have been covered, you know, elsewhere, or I think people have obviously discovered them for ourselves. But in terms of the gaming, I suppose it's best just to try and centre it around you know, the Scottish Nationals that happened recently.
Yeah.
So unlike the previous year, the points were increased from 1,000 to 1,250.
Yeah, 1,250 is. As our Australian friend said, since day one, they thought 1,250 was the sweet spot.
I don't think it is. And from when I went to create my army list for this, for the Nationals, I never had to compromise anything, because 1,250 points gave me enough to get everything that I wanted. Whereas 1,000 points, something has to give. There's a you know, what am I going to say, call it, like a chink in your armour.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gap.
There's consequences for your choices.
Yeah, there's a gap in your strategy or what strategies you can lay out at 1,000. Whereas 1,250, I felt I had all bases covered.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, it was the standard 6 games, random game selection, which is something that I don't know how people. Was that you? Was that your fault? That's okay.
Me, because originally the Nationals were going to be 6 games.
Yep.
6 missions. You were going to get told what missions were getting played, but it'd be random which one was played each turn. Mm-hmm. So you play each mission once, but you'd sort of roll off for game one, might have been actually mission six or mission four.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but you knew you were going to play one of the six. Oh, you were going to play all six at some point.
Yeah. Now, I don't like that because you're rocking up knowing exactly what you have to do.
Yep.
Now, some of the newer Bow Action missions, because we've gone from six missions to 12 in the version two, mm-hmm. there are some missions that are so far out there in terms of what you need to complete them,
yep.
that if you build a force, for example, heavy guns to take the enemy, you're going to sacrifice the speed to get off the table,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. It was literally a case of you couldn't prepare for the mission.
Yeah,
you went in blind.
I liked it. I like going for the 12 missions, but I didn't have an issue with it, as I've just said, but I think, though, it meant players had to be prepared,
yeah.
and actually read the 12 missions, yeah. mm-hmm. and understand that Attacker Defender was there,
yeah.
so that when they went to create their lists, and I've touted many times, balance,
yeah.
is the key factor. And for my own list, it was a single platoon. The bulk of it was regular troops. It was German, of course. That was winter time for them. Again, it's always winter for them. with a couple of veteran units, but I found it a really enjoyable experience, and managed to finish second overall for the second year running, Bridesmaid.
I was running it, but because of dropouts on the day, I had to play on day one with my unpainted...
Who dropped out? Craig?
I don't know. Somebody slept in and missed the bus.
Stephen.
Correct. Who would that be?
He slept in and missed the bus on day one, which apparently meant he couldn't come on day two either. So he must have slept in by quite a long time.
The day one, the bus debacle was I slept in, missed the first bus 10, but they were on from there. And on day two was Sunday. Unfortunately, there is no public transport sufficient enough to get me from Edinburgh to Dunfermline.
It's a terrible excuse.
At all. That's
why
I was looking for.
Yeah.
We should point out. We should point out that. Stephen doesn't live in the busy metropolis as Edinburgh. Stephen lives in 1956.
Which is 26 miles outside of Edinburgh.
We should also probably add that this year the Nationals weren't in Edinburgh. They were in Dunfermline again.
That's right.
So unfortunately our local gaming store shut down, so they got moved across to Dunfermline to the Dwarf Club.
And what I'll say on that is, firstly, I agree with Al that it was a really enjoyable couple of days. Relatively small number of competitors, but as we were discussing before we came on here, a really pretty high quality
mm-hmm.
group. So it was, there were a lot of tricky games, a lot of really interesting games, quite intense games. I thought Dwarf put on a good show, as they always do. So thanks to those guys again. And yeah, it was. The mix of missions, I think the fact that 12 missions were there, I, as someone who hadn't really played an awful lot of version 2 by that point, didn't have a great prior grasp of the new sort of six missions. So I think you're right. I think there was quite a lot of people went into it maybe with quite a firm grasp of how they would play five or six of the missions, but the other ones... Not so much.
I'm going to make an admission in that I managed to get quite a few practice games in beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and myself and my opponent prior, it was sadly none of you guys, and I do regret that, but but we identified a few of the missions that were
problematic.
I don't know what other term to use, and
is that the ones where the wording's a little bit
we're just
tough.
Yeah, we practice them, and you guys are going to have to help me out, but I think it's double envelopment when you've got the three objectives. What's that one?
No, double envelopment when you both get off the boat.
Oh, that's easy. That's
point,
a great
point
mission.
Defense.
Point defense.
Point defense.
They've changed.
And there was the rules variant on point defense when the defender places the three objectives down as is written in the rule book. Then before any other deployment, the attacker has to pick one of those three objectives,
yeah.
and that's what they have to claim in order to win the game.
Is that not the variation for the tournament
that's the variation from the British Historical War Games Society.
Right.
Yeah.
And we played that, and I quite enjoy it, but it does make the mission trickier. whereas the original version, it's going to be a draw.
Yeah.
So converting it from a draw to a win for either side is quite hard, very hard. The variation from the British Historical Society, good guys. So their conversion of the rules for the mission meant that it's very easy to lose it as the defender.
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
So
speaking as the person who was a defender across the table from
yes, the oh, we did. We played did. The game. We did. Yes, we did.
And,
we played
and,
that
and
mission
was,
round two
and again,
or
was,
round three.
It was a really good game.
Yep.
But as you were saying, after the game we were having a bit of a recap, and it made it because I remember you saying at the time I wouldn't want to be the defender. And it is difficult because you know, you're at that point where you have to certainly initially set yourself up so that you can defend any one of the three.
Yep.
And obviously as the attacker.
Yep.
You know,
the strategy that I developed for myself and with this other player was that if you are the defender, you're always going to defend the middle one, and then you have to choose the one on the left or the one on the right, and it is potluck. I think if any attacker chooses to go for the middle one, good luck.
Yeah.
You must have balls of steel.
Yeah.
So you're going to pick either the left or the right. So when the defender chooses what they're going to defend, you pick the middle plus one other, and you just roll the dice and hope for the best. And you leave one unit that can sneakily go off and hold the objective you left behind, and then you just put it down to luck. That's the only strategy I could come up with.
I think you're absolutely right. In retrospect, I think my problem was in trying to leaving too many things off the field at the start in reserve, and again trying to almost divide my arm into thirds.
Yeah.
To hold everything. Then you're in that horrible problem where you're trying to run things across the table and you just can't get across the table quickly enough.
Yeah.
Actually, your strategy for that was quite interesting, because when I was driving home from the tournament, I was thinking that your strategy was effectively rope-a-dope and I was the dope.
Yeah.
And that you had a on your right, you threw not a flimsy feint, you threw a relatively strong feint down the right, which I had to do something about. I couldn't not, because otherwise you would have then just cruised to that objective.
Yeah.
So that did draw enough that I had for me to repulse it. And obviously as a defender, you tend to, if you're trying to hold this thing, you tend to throw more than the opponent needs.
Mm-hmm.
So like you tend to go into overkill, and then of course you came full on, and by the last couple of turns, you know, we both knew it was going to happen. It was just a case of, would the dice be lucky for me, and it need to be lucky for me to save the day. So it was interesting. What I will say about that game, and that leads on to a wider point, I think, and that we've been going on talking about the hobby. The 88 had an interesting role in that game.
Yeah. He was a big area denial.
Yeah, and in that game, the game before that, 88 had been just knocking tanks out.
Was that the game where you tabled me? Almost.
I didn't table you.
I had one model left.
The dog was left? The dog handler?
No, I didn't. I'm Marines. I'm a deck.
Well, so you did. That was a different game.
I had something wandering about.
Almost tabling you twice in a year.
No. You're not. No. No. The previous tournament. Confused sounding for the listeners. The previous tournament, the Dwarf, you ran your Marine Corps, is when you got nearly tabled.
I also nearly came with my deck in the first turn of the Nationals because the red bombardment came down and took out two of my half tracks.
But the
and then your 38Ts killed everything.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, the point I was trying to make is that the 88 had its obviously as a tank killer, it's an infantry killer as well.
Yeah.
As a certain listener with an Australian list and a crocodile might remember from when he tried to charge it. But as an area denial weapon, as a game changer, as a way of completely altering the way your opponent's strategy works, I thought it was really, really interesting in a way that other artillery pieces don't.
Yeah.
Because again, you you, our game turned out a game of chess, and the way you were just trying to avoid that bubble at all costs.
Well, the quick way to boil it down for the 88 was it spent most of its time on ambush.
It did.
And because of the rules as it was for it, it's got a 360 degree arc of fire.
Yeah.
And its range is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's going to hit you on a 3+.
So you bought one.
So I bought one. That's a whole big bag of win. And that was the conversion, you know, that was what converted me over to think this is a good for a particular type of game. As a defender, you couldn't have wanted for more. I think as the attacker, you wouldn't have got any value from the 88.
I agree with that.
People should start believing me. First episodes of Tigers were
awesome. But back at the Batcave, what you're saying is, and what we're talking about is, though, that because it was 6 missions out of 12 missions to be played, you've got to take an army list that can do for that. So Andy got the right result for him in terms of being the defender, because he had the right tools for it.
He had 3 units that could get off the board fast, because he had two tanks and a Kubel wagon.
Wasn't trying to get off the board fast.
No, but if you had to.
Oh, in one of those games. I had the heavy fuel car. I had two tanks, and I had the horses. Don't forget the horses.
You
had
wagon. At the Nationals, I had a half track with a unit of 8 guys and a 2-man unit that had a weapon that remains nameless.
And the Panzer IV.
I had 2 units of 6 veterans in heavy fueled cars.
Yep.
I had the motorbike and sidecar, had the Panzer IV, good tank.
That's good.
Should be many more of them in the world. Rules as written, get them out there. Yeah, love it. Welcome to Scotland. Raw. So I had plenty of mobility.
I had my deck where I had everything was mounted in half tracks or trucks. Lots of recce, the 88 for 80.
Yep.
I thought I had stuff to take objectives and to shoot things. I'd only played with the list twice.
Yep.
Not quite figured out how to run it yet.
I think a big thing from the Nationals overall was that there were some very high powered lists there. We're not going to go into them today. I don't want to go into them today. Yes, there was a list that had 5 quad maxim machine gun trucks, and yes, that list did end up winning, but
he's a really nice guy and doesn't power game it.
No,
that's the difference.
Well, that's a truism, but nobody in the field won all their games.
No. And from a points perspective, there was only ever a couple of points between places.
Yes,
it wasn't. No one went way ahead,
and first and second place were split on tiebreaker.
Yes.
So it was a close run thing.
And I got a prize.
For turning
worst
up.
Worst bolt action player in Scotland. Best proxy.
So you didn't fudge yourself out the wooden spoon this time?
I couldn't. I got smashed by you. Andy smashed me. I got smashed by a guy who told me he'd never played bolt action before.
Saw me coming.
Again, very nice guy though. That's the thing. Yeah. Everyone who played was really nice.
Mm-hmm. What about yourself, Bonner? What's your? Because obviously you had transport issues on the day, but gaming wise
for non-event.
Yeah.
Apart from really the
Mox in the hole.
Mox, yeah. A few games at Mox against the famed Australian list and got a draw in my favour.
Mm-hmm.
A draw in your favour? How does that work?
How does that work?
I killed more, but not by more than 2.
Got you.
The old moral victory.
So on tournament divider at the end, I killed more units, but it's still a draw for
me. But you didn't clear the 2-kill gap.
Yes. But it was never beyond 1 or 2 kills throughout the whole game. Mm-hmm. And it was basically mopping up the last at the end kind of thing. We just couldn't kill off the veterans on each side.
That's the thing I noticed at the Nationals on day 2 when I was walking around watching the tables. Not everyone, but a lot of the folk there were playing for killing units. They weren't playing the mission.
Mm.
Which is fine, because, you know, we'll actually role play it as it is in the book. Do what you want.
Well, there's 2 missions that focus on that, is there not?
But not when they weren't playing that.
Yeah, I know, when you're not playing those missions, it's irrelevant.
It's we've all done it to a certain extent.
It's a default, you know.
It's easy to do, I think. And maybe it's just because I've fallen into that trap as well, and I'm not clever enough to avoid it every time. But it is easy to get into the
light foot in the bag. Going for the unit kills so that you have a dice advantage.
Particularly with this game system. You know, when you kill a unit, that's fine. It's one less unit that can do you damage, one less unit that can capture an objective or whatever. Equally, it tips the advantage, the initiative in your favour every turn. But it can become a thing where trying to have that balance where you think, you know, is it better just to hold my fire? Is it better to hunker down and hide behind a building? You know. Yes, Alistair.
Hello, sorry, I had a hand up. I don't like interrupting people. But if you look at the,
no, it's the beer
we had a really fun we had a really fun two player game today, and we you know, a lot of fun just reconnecting with the game and each other. That sounded really bad. Sorry, guys. But there was a situation, because you're talking about killing units. That's the way forward. Towards the end of the game, it was your standard sort of taking hold an objective in the middle, and it was myself and Stephen on one side facing off against Team Germany.
And the British.
And I'd analysed it down that I was going to have to sacrifice one of my troop units in a charge against a superior enemy to make them use their order dice so that they couldn't then move and claim the objective. So for me, that was, I was giving up what people would think is the thing not to give up. I don't know if I'm making sense, but
so you gave up a dice to essentially.
I sacrificed the dice
to make it more likely to win the game.
Yeah.
To try and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that all players would do that.
No.
I think it's I hate paying you compliments.
That's okay.
maybe I'm paying the beard a compliment.
Pay the beard a compliment.
If you could just cover the top of your head and I could talk to the beard.
Like Zorro.
You know, it's a bit worrying.
Beardo.
It's like a full fit off of
FBI's Most Wanted.
It's like a full fit.
Have you seen a beard like this?
I would say that making that kind of decision, first of all, understanding the way the rules mechanisms connect each other. So that idea about making the charge not to kill a unit or not to drive a unit off an objective or
yep.
not just to move your unit somewhere, but making the charge so that you cleared your unit out of the line of fire of some other units.
Oh, yeah.
But
yep.
you were degrading another unit, but critically you were changing the way the dice were coming out the bag.
Mm-hmm.
In your favour. I mean, I think that's the mark of being a very good player, and someone who does come second in the past two Scottish Nationals, etc. Versus at the sort of surface level, it's there's a unit killer.
Yep.
For me at the moment, I think I still tend to fall into that trap more often than I would like.
Mm-hmm.
Not every time.
Yeah.
Not even maybe the majority of the time, but too often.
Yeah.
And it's been able in the split second, or not split second, but in the heat of the game, to actually say, hang on, let's make a fairly cold, rational decision. I mean, when it comes to sacrificing infantry, at the end of the day, you've played the Soviets for years, so you know,
yeah.
you should be good at that.
But it's like, that was a real snapshot that was critical to the mission. But that strategy, I deployed that strategy during an entire game, and it was I can never remember the names of the missions when you have to get off the board. Double envelopment? Is that it?
No, is it not? The one we have to get off the board.
The one where you have to get your units off the board, or get your units into
your
enemy deployment zone. So it's, you get 1 point for killing a unit, two for being in your enemy's deployment zone, three for getting off the board. My opponent, I might not have been at the Nationals, it was at a tournament. My opponent had an all infantry army, so he was going to have to foot slog it hard.
Yeah.
I had troops and transports and everything else. I was feeding him targets to shoot, and he happily stood there and shot them and killed them, which is totally legit. And I fed him those targets up until maybe turn 3.5, turn 4, and that's when he realised that even if he started running his troops now, he was never actually going to make them into my deployment zone. And then I swung all my trucks and little vehicle-y things, and they were off.
Yeah.
So I baited him. It's like, shoot them. And obviously you want to stand and shoot because you don't want the movement penalty.
Yep.
Well, you've just lost yourself the game thinking, though, the mentality, thinking that you're winning, thinking that you're killing stuff and that you're ahead.
And you could even be thinking more than just, I'm shooting stuff, therefore I'm winning.
Yeah.
You could even be thinking, well, I'm stopping those units from getting off my end of the table.
Yeah.
but you're not, as you say, you're not thinking three or four steps ahead, but hold on a minute.
I mean,
I need to go off the table.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I think we've all of us here have played or dabbled a bit in War Machine or Hordes in the past.
I have to say that's true, yeah.
One or two games.
Yeah.
I think that's possibly something that War Machine does very well.
Is
that there's a two-tier victory system.
Mm-hmm.
There's your mission objectives to win the game,
mm-hmm.
or there's the default on every mission of caster kill or engine kill.
Yeah.
So you either kill the caster or you kill other jacks, the battle group's dead, game
yeah.
over. I think bolt action suffers from that sometimes. And that some people like Al will look at the, and this is what's really irritating the game, compliments. It's really annoying. He looks at both.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us get sucked in the fact of actually put down toy users and kill yourself.
Mm-hmm. Or not throughout the whole game.
Yeah.
But for enough of the game
yep.
that then when you do realise you're not quite in the right place to make it happen. And then you need to sort of think on your feet and pull it out of the bag somehow.
Yeah.
Which, yes, okay, we've all done that sometimes. It's great when
mm-hmm.
you do manage to get a win out of your opponent has gamed you, but yet you still win. And that's just the way, especially with the randomised way.
Yeah.
That's
it.
Game at the end of the day. But you're right in that War Machine plays like chess.
Yes.
A lot of the time, and the system's built to be like that. And I felt that game today was great because there was obviously good banter and all the rest of it. But there was, particularly those last couple of turns around the objective, it was getting really chess-like. It was like, where's your 90-degree, your 90-degree turns with your tanks
yeah.
and your vehicles?
Super precise.
Super precise at the end.
And when you think back, you had to think about that when you brought the tank on.
That's right.
You know, did you need to line up dead center pointing at your target,
yeah.
or could you have left it? Offset to left or right depending on what your future was going to be like.
And even things like taking into account the 3D aspect of the 1-inch separation of units, we actually had to get down to that as well.
Yeah, yeah. Why did we do that?
Multiple levels of our
room.
Yeah.
We've got in this habit of playing, we play bolt action the way we play bolt action. But with recent events, we've decided, and we've started doing this more in Scotland over the last years, to go back to bolt action in the rulebook.
Mm-hmm.
So bolt action raw. Now, there's a lot of rules in the rulebook that we just don't use. It's not on purpose that we're ignoring them.
We
play for fun. You know?
Or they don't come up.
Yeah, they don't come up. So we spent today with doubles in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which was good.
Yeah,
was
like
good.
Flanking. Can you come on your own board edge if you're out flanking?
Yeah. Which you can.
You can't.
You can't.
Didn't
you
know
you
could do that.
You're going to outflank.
Yep.
The 1-inch height verve rule. Double
mm-hmm.
checked that a couple of times. It's good.
Who
it's
can
playing.
Shoot and who can choose not to shoot in a
yeah.
unit
mm-hmm.
so that the unit itself can shoot if it has a target.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, going forward, my hope is that next year's Nationals will not have those variations in the missions. I would prefer if it's 100% rulebook
mm-hmm.
based.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being is that Dave can walk up from a gaming club in
whatever
Sunderland
yeah.
and play in the Scottish Nationals. He doesn't need to lead the pack.
Because
he knows that with Al's idea for platoons.
That's a whole future cast.
With the idea of bolt action raw, he can walk up knowing that he can play.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
He doesn't need to know any comp or any restrictions because we don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
They're bad words in Scotland.
Bad words, comp.
Take your dirty composition restrictions and
send it on a ship somewhere.
Yeah.
Leave them, set
fire to them.
Leave them at the door when you enter
but
to play for fun.
Don't be afraid to come to Scotland.
No.
Because you're not going to get any surprises.
No.
If it's in the rule book or if it's in an expansion book, except for the War Reporter,
yeah.
you're going to see it.
Yeah.
Stupid War Reporter.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
It's funny because is that not the case in Infinity as well? They've banned the War Reporter model with most owners, the War Corps, War Correspondent. Not just the War Reporters, people just don't like KAD.
Journalists.
But
you've got to watch out for those journalists.
No, rules as written, you know, playing the game the way, I was going to say the way God intended, but the way Alessio intended is the way forward. It definitely is. And I think when you start tweaking the rules, you start messing with the rules, and there's a lot of unintended consequences. You start having knock-on effects elsewhere.
So I think, you know, that's our episode 10. So we got back together. It's good, isn't it?
Very.
The band is back.
know,
let's not commit to the next episode though. Don't make promises we can't keep.
No, stuff can happen, you know.
Because you'll find it more what's going to happen in terms of the podcast and over the next couple of weeks after this is out. I'll put some more information for you.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Facebook page keeps getting updated, and Mr. Owl keeps spamming it with pictures of his Germans.
Yeah.
Which I need to sit and then put back in the right folder.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a folder that says Owl's Winter Germans. And all Owls are in the upload folder, which is full of random nonsense now as well.
Didn't know that.
And obviously the 700 pictures I took from Bovington aren't helping either. I hugged a tiger, which is good.
Yeah. But no,
that was my claim to fame, you hugged a tiger. But so that's done for episode 10.
Okay.
Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye.
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 The preceding podcast is a property of Home Guard Radio. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Home Guard Radio, or you can join us on our blog at homeguardradio.com. Any comments, criticisms or reviews can be left there, or you can contact us on homeguardradio@gmail.com.